came in thinking of reorganizing the intelligence community. That's why he had General Flynn on there. And that's why I put an affidavit in the support of General Flynn's case, as well as Roger Stone's, talking about the false Russiagate narrative. And I had forensic evidence to prove that in a court of law. And I submitted it in that affidavit. And they, the judges in those cases, both Obama administration, you know, appointees, would not allow my testimony in either of those cases. So what they're trying to do is keep the truth about this out of court, out of the public domain, so no one really understands or knows what's going on. These people don't understand. Everything that they have done also is recorded and retroactively can be analyzed by anybody who's going to do an honest job in the Department of Justice, and they can put these people in jail. So, and that's really what the threat is. So I know exactly what they do, and that's why I put that affidavit in support of that case. And it's going into the Supreme Court, I think last Friday it was submitted. So we'll have to see if the Supreme Court is a part of this or not, and whether or not they will stand up for the Constitution or not.
Hi, this is Sarah. Before we get into our regular programming, I want to tell you about the Sheriff fundraiser that we're doing. We're trying to raise $300,000 to educate at least one third of the sheriffs in this country to protect our rights, the rights that are promised to us in the Constitution, and not only to educate them on what their oath of office is, but also on how to go about doing that. If there are more business shutdowns, and more importantly, if there's a mass forced vaccination plan that gets implemented, how do the sheriffs protect our rights? And they need to be ready and prepared to do that. So this educational effort, this major fund drive that we're doing of $300,000 will go to fund this effort to get them educated. So if you have any money that you can donate, and I realize that there are many, many people out of work, but if you do have some money that you can donate to this very important cause, please consider doing that. You can go to sheriffffund.com and donate today. Thank you so much for supporting this important cause.
Yeah, we put forward a proposal to clean up the voting rolls for the whole country between Social Security, the census data that on registration to vote, and phone books and various other means of Department of Motor Vehicles, things like that. All that data coming together, you can actually validate and verify all of the people who are eligible to vote in every polling station in the country. And you could do that before the election and have that distributed to them and saying, these are the only people in your area that are eligible to vote. And when they come in, they need to show the ID to show that that's who they are. And then and they're eligible. That's it. So that was the one thing that we said we could do to help fix this voting issue. Plus, we wanted to put a parallel counting process in, so that they were using optical readers to do a read of the vote, then we wanted a parallel output so we can have a check and balance on the correct reporting through the system to that. We also wanted to put sniffers on the line between gaps in the system so that we could see that if someone came into any of the voting records and tried to change them, we would be able to pick them up and find out and exactly what they were doing when they did it. Not weeks or months later. This is all done with software electronically. You know in seconds who's doing what. You know, we put that together with the ThinPred program in NSA. We were developing that internally to do a monitoring of the record, the logs of all the networks that we were looking at. And then we would be able to tell who was doing what on the network, where they went, how long they stayed as they did it. So that if they had, and NSA didn't want that, by the way, because that would expose everything they were doing, moving money around and showing hiding programs that were failing yet still being funded. And all of that would be exposed. And the management at NSA said, you mean to tell me Congress can come in and see all of that information, all of these programs and money? And we said, sure. And they said, their answer to us is, you are never going to do this program because it would expose the crimes they're committing. So that was what we wanted to do with the entire network for the U.S. government. Why not? I mean, why shouldn't we make our government honest?
Exactly. So that wasn't received well, or what happened with that?
Oh, it was deep six because nobody in management at NSA wanted anything like that known by Congress or anyone else, because you could have FOIA'd that kind of information.
Well, and that's what I want to ask. You know, you brought up Soros. He's always this evil villain. He's been quoted as saying his life work isn't done. And I'm going to paraphrase here. His life work isn't done until the United States is completely destroyed. I mean, that's his goal. He said it multiple occasions, and it's, you know, I'm paraphrasing exactly what he said. So how are they getting this many traitors infiltrated into our intelligence agencies and into positions of power without there being, I mean, with so many people being docile? Is it, they're obviously not Americans, if you will, they're traitors. How did they get this many traitors infiltrated throughout our entire government system?
That's a much longer story, but I'll give you the starting point. At the end of World War II, we had a nascent intelligence operation that had been run under Franklin Roosevelt to win the war. General Donovan was running it through the OSS, the Office of Strategic Services, I think. And after Roosevelt died, it got completely transformed into a British civil service type intelligence agency, with the leading role played by Sir William Stevenson, a man called Intrepid, someone who was an influential figure in shaping U.S., the creation of the U.S. intelligence community, working with people like Alan Dulles, one of the top criminals of the Wall Street banking community, who became the CIA director. And Kennedy fired him after the Bay of Pigs. He hated Kennedy, and he ended up running the Warren Commission report. So what happened is that you had this network of so-called experts that were tied to this, basically to this cartel. Many of them came out of Wall Street. They were lawyers. They were bankers. They had international connections. And so when the intelligence community was initially set up, many of these people were brought in, and they continued to bring in their people. I'll give you a quick example. Zbigniew Brzezinski, who comes out of this network, a geopolitician of the British school, who was the one responsible for the whole idea of using Islamic fundamentalism against Russia and China when he was Jimmy Carter's national security advisor. One of his protégés was Madeleine Albright. One of Madeleine Albright's protégés was Susan Rice. These people go to the same schools, the same networks. This is where on the Republican side you have the Bush crowd, and on the Democratic side, you have the Brzezinski, Clinton, Obama crowd. But here's the best way to understand it. Remember when Barr stepped in and nullified the conviction of Michael Flynn, and 2,000 former Justice Department officials signed a letter opposing that? That's the deep state. It's not a bunch of people who skulk around in the shadows. They're in the bureaucracy. This is the permanent bureaucracy. And I think Bill knows this very well from his work over at NSA. They're not necessarily evil people, but to get ahead and to make their careers, they go along to get along. And the people who run these agencies are the criminals, but it's the cowardice of people who won't challenge it. Or in the case of Bill, someone who challenged it and they made an example of him. You know, with a raid on him, a legal case. Look what they did to Roger Stone. Look what they did to Manafort. They take leading examples and brutalize them to terrorize the ones who might speak out to go along. And then the careerists know that their route to the top is to play along with the game.
Well, you know, Donald Jeffries wrote a book called Bullyocracy. And I don't think it's getting the credit it deserves, because what he's trying to explain, I think, is how a bully, like in a high school, if you will, the most popular, most asshole in the school, you know, those type of people are the ones that kind of run everything and everybody follows along and nobody questions it. It's almost like that's the environment we have on top, where everybody's following the biggest bullies and those people are running things. It's like a bully environment. And just to try to relate it to a common sense, like how can we get so many people following along? And it's the psychology of the fear and the need to kind of sheep along with what they think is going to get themselves ahead, even if they know it's just not healthy. I mean, because it's a condition of, it's a human condition where when we're in those kind of frightful situations, a lot of humans will fall, step in line. And if you studied what they did in Nazi Germany, you know, why did the guards guard the concentration camps? Why did they participate knowing it was wrong? What was the human condition that so many people followed along when it was, there was so much evil going on? And that's the same situation we have here, because it doesn't make sense.
I'd like Bill to talk about this, because he's an example of someone who didn't go along, who stuck to principle and is sticking to principle and has not only survived, but has a louder voice now probably than he had before. But Bill, isn't this what you saw in NSA, the way they would control the situation?
Yeah, absolutely. They would threaten the population of NSA with the FBI, for example, or anything, if anybody talked about anything NSA was doing outside of the walls of NSA. And you know, it's basically the same kind of thing is happening here that was like happening in the Weimar Republic in 1933. If you looked at the National Defense Authorization Act, Section 1021, it says exactly, it says the president can declare anybody a terrorist and have the military take them into custody and hold them incarcerated indefinitely with no due process. That is exactly what Special Order 48 issued by the Nazis in 1933 after the Reichstag fire. That's exactly what that order said. And that's the order they used to take care of all their political enemies and anybody else they didn't like. And so we're being set up the same way. We're going down this totalitarian path. I saw this from the very beginning in 2001 when Bush, Cheney, Hayden, and Tenet decided to spy on the entire country of the United States. And that, to me, was right out of the totalitarian playbook. And so I said that this was the process we were going down. It's going to be population control, and it's going to be a police state, basically. And that's fundamentally what we have now. They send the FBI to do their dirty work anywhere they want. Shut up people, go after them like Stone or Flynn. If they get in the road or they're not the right thing, they don't have the right thinking in their view, which is their thinking. If you don't adopt our thinking and our way of doing business, we're coming after you. And that's exactly what they did to us. The NSA whistleblowers, Tom Drake, Diane Rourke, who came from the House Intelligence Committee, and Ed Loomis and myself, they came after all of us with the FBI. And they also threatened us all with the Department of Justice, trying to put us in jail for 35 years under the Espionage Act. What they didn't know is that I didn't trust them from the very beginning. So I started assembling all this evidence against them, and I could prove malicious prosecution in a court of law. And I told them, and I gave them the evidence I had on them, and I said I was gonna charge you with malicious prosecution when we go to court. So let's go. And they never came back after that. They threatened us. They told our lawyer they were going to indict us, but they gave up because I had the goods on them. But that's the only reason we as the NSA group weren't in jail. The rest of them, I mean, General Flynn didn't. He was surprised by what the FBI did. I was not, because I knew they lied and manufactured evidence in our case. It was very clear. They did the same thing in the Roger Stone case. So, I mean, this was no surprise to me. I knew these people and how corrupt and criminal they were. These guys, you know, Flynn and Stone, did not.
One interesting thing that Roger Stone said in our event the other day is that he said he foresaw this happening back in the 1982-83 period when he saw the attacks on Lyndon LaRouche.
Yeah.
When President Reagan was going along with LaRouche's strategic advice on the Strategic Defense Initiative. And Roger said he could see this unfold because LaRouche had played an important role in helping Reagan get elected by going after George Bush in New Hampshire. Remember, Bush won the Iowa caucus in 1980. And then we put out a leaflet which said, if you like Jimmy Carter, you'll love George Bush. The Reagan people distributed that widely in New Hampshire. And shortly after that, the Bushes went after LaRouche, set up the Get LaRouche Task Force. And they put in the Boston case, Robert Mueller, an up-and-coming U.S. attorney, as the person running the LaRouche case. Now, what Roger said is interesting. He said he foresaw this happening, but people didn't move on it because the media portrayed LaRouche as a kook as a, the same way Trump has been smeared, although LaRouche, I think, was smeared even worse. Nazi, anti-Semite, communist, East German agent. And so people were afraid to speak out. And even when we started winning elections, we won some elections in 1986 and 1988, and they said the same thing, that people are being misled by the LaRouche con artists. So we have a long history in this. We survived. Bill Binney survived. It looks like Roger Stone is going to survive, and he's speaking the truth about what was done to him in his case by this corrupt judge. So the truth is out there. The people who are listening to this program have a responsibility to make sure other people hear this. They hear Bill Binney. They hear Roger Stone. They hear me. They hear you. We've got to get this story out as widely as possible, as quickly as possible, because the chances are that our last hope may be whether Durham comes through with some kind of set of indictments before November, or at least that it's clear that this is going to happen. It should happen before November. You shouldn't wait till after the election. And I think some of the Republicans are saying, the ones who don't like Trump, are saying, no, let's hold it off. We don't want to make this an election issue. It should have been an issue 2 years ago when they knew that Comey lied and Brennan lied and Clapper lied. So it's better late than never. But if it's too late...
They need to do it because people are losing faith that they're ever going to do it. And we know where this totalitarian nightmare is heading. And it's happened in every country where history shows when you have this extreme control over people. Well, I don't know if they've ever had this extreme control. That's even scarier. And that's the mass forced vaccinations and all the other games that they're planning on playing. How much time do we have here? Because to me, I am seeing this train of totalitarianism, you know, coming down really fast. And if we don't divert it and slow it down, there could be some serious tragedy around the world and in our country as well. How much time do we have and how serious is this?
Well, I don't know, but I think the 2020 election is going to be kind of a critical turning point. What we have to do is make all those people who go along to get along accessories, knowing accessories or unknowing accessories to the crimes that are being committed against us in terms of violation of the Constitution and other laws that exist, all of which the Justice Department knows and all of which Comey stated against Hillary Clinton, not all of them, but he said some of them about her, and yet they gave her a pass because she was a member of the Department of Just Us. You know, we are not. But the point is, if we don't make the Democrats pay a price, and also the Republicans that voted for the Patriot Act and all this spying, if we don't make them all pay a price in the 2020 election, then we, the people, are going to get what we deserve, and it's not going to be pretty.
Well, and we do have an issue that we, the people, have a responsibility to start learning what's going on and not be so brainwashed by the mass media, because this mass media is completely out of control. It is horrifying to watch them lie night after night, especially from this end when I know the facts. I'm being talking to other people. I know it, and then I watch them lie. It's very difficult to watch it and not get, you know, from my standpoint, I can't watch certain channels. I just can't do it anymore. And I'll do it every so often because I need, and then I 10 minutes, I think, is my max, because it's so hard to watch them lie. But it's harder to watch the people believe it, I think.
Yeah.
I don't think most people believe it. That's the point. I don't think people have a basis for judgment, but they don't like things that are going on. Look, what I said earlier, we're going to see a wave of evictions and foreclosures in the days and weeks ahead because of the effects of the lockdown. Now, as I talked with you last fall, the crash was already underway last August and September, when the Federal Reserve had to step in with mega bailouts of the speculators. They used the COVID crisis to do a new bailout, but it's not going to work. And in the meantime, we're seeing massive transfer of funds to the wealthiest 1% of the population, and probably 80% of the population, many of which used to be middle class, falling into poverty, possible homelessness, permanent unemployment. the breakdown of cities and so on. So the crisis is here. It's not as though it's going to be sometime in the future. Now, the political crisis is here. You've got a guy who's running for president like he's in the Federal Witness Protection Program. Biden is holed up in a basement most of the time. They won't let him speak for more than 3 seconds at a time because he won't remember who he is or where he is. Now, the way to run this campaign, though, is not just a negative campaign against Biden. The president should do what he did in 2016, reassert his commitment to work with countries that we see as adversaries, like Russia and China, because it's better to talk, as he said, than to go to war, to recommit himself to the infrastructure and revitalization of manufacture. That can't happen overnight, but you need to change the credit policy, which means you can't use the credit of the United States to bail out speculators who have unsustainable debt on their books. You have to let that debt go. It should have been canceled in 2008. And then you need new credit that goes into industry, into the cities, into infrastructure. All of this the president has talked about. He has to put it together in a coherent picture. And I'll just say one final point on this. I'm very happy that Roger Stone is speaking out, because Roger was the one who helped Trump craft this, not in 2016, but in 1992, 1988. They were talking about what had to be done to put the country back on track. And you know the famous documentary, Get Me Roger Stone. I sort of look at the commutation as maybe some people around Trump saying, get me Roger Stone. We need to be more biting and more clear on what the alternatives are. And that's what I'm trying to do with my associates with LaRouche PAC. That's what Bill is doing in raising this whole question of either we stop this security state spying apparatus now or nobody has any security.
Well, and do you think Flynn will come back into the administration?
I don't know.
I hope he will.
Yeah. He definitely would have a lot to say.
I think he's probably been traumatized a little bit, and hopefully he's going to come back stronger and maybe help and realize how incredibly important it is to really clean this up. And I don't want to end this on a negative note, because not that it's not extremely serious. We all know it's very serious. But how can we end this in a positive where we can motivate people to do their part to help this cause? Because this is all hands on deck. This is every oar in the water kind of thing. We all need to be doing this, and we need to do it in a way that we can't be scared. We have to have the courage, but we don't want to be in fights with everybody on the street. I mean, it's really gotten to that point. So how does the average person do it without, you know, I mean, in a constructive way?
Well, I'll say something.
Yeah, go ahead.
It might seem to be coming out of left field, but we just launched an Atlas V rocket to Mars. We just had the return of the two astronauts that were sent up in the, I think it was the Space Dragon, the Elon Musk rocket, which was the first rocket launched from American soil in over a decade. And then for the first time, I think in 30 years or so, we had a landing in the ocean. So the solution to the problems we have of the economy are directing credit to production, to physical economy, to technology, scientific research development, pulling it away from speculation. Now, that can be done very quickly with a few bills in the Congress, and some of it can be done by executive order. So the solution to these problems, as I put it, when you look at the interrelationship between intelligence and fraud and the financial management and war production, the solution is put America back to work building the things we need. And that as a slogan, that as a campaign promise, we've put out a pamphlet that talks about how we could create 50 million new productive jobs in the United States, take these young people who are wasting away in the cities and give them some hope and optimism for the future. So I think an optimism is what's needed. You're absolutely right about that. And too many people, including a lot of people who like your program, Sarah, they still say to me when they write to me, well, it'll never happen. They're too powerful. The people are sheep and they won't do it. Well, that's the kind of attitude that's self-fulfilling. break that attitude. America became a great country because we took on the leading imperial power in the world, the British Empire, and defeated them in a revolutionary war. That should be the inspiration for people, that we built a nation out of nothing.
Well, and we wouldn't be here doing this if we didn't think there was hope. I have hope because I don't want to sit here every day and do this and talk about traumatic issues if there isn't hope. I think we can turn this around, and I refuse to let it continue this way forever. I'm not going to stop fighting until the last breath I have, because my children aren't going to live in this environment, and I don't want any child to live in this environment. So, Bill, what do you have?
Well, I agree with Harley on everything he said, and I just think that people need to realize that they have more power than they really understand they have. I mean, it's a matter of recognizing the power you really have, and that's at the voting, and even before that, you can stand up. I mean, I keep saying that democracy is not a spectator sport. You have to participate. If you don't, you're going to lose. Use it or lose it. If you don't want to use your democracy, you're running a big chance of losing, and that's the state we're in right now. I looked at this as the most serious threat to our republic since the Civil War. I mean, that was the greatest crisis this country has ever faced, and now we're in that position again. And so I just think people need to stand up and say what they think and what they feel to their representatives, to anybody, do things publicly, talk to people, say, challenge everything you're being told. Look for evidence, the basic evidence, not hearsay, not opinions, none of that, speculative statements or anything from anybody. I mean, I've heard, you wouldn't believe how many speculative statements I've gotten from technical people who should know better, but don't seem to, about this, about the FAT file format showing that it was downloaded, the DNC data was downloaded to a thumb drive or a CD-ROM. I mean, it's just insane. And yet,
it's cognitive dissonance.
Yeah, they just go off on endless speculation and dribble. You know, it's the same as the mainstream media. That's all they're doing. And if people buy that, which is apparently there's a very large number of people who are, they're not challenging it. Ask them what the basic evidence for their statements are. You know, what evidence do you have? Do you have any? Yes or no? Or are you just going to tell me your opinion? Opinion is hearsay. That's all that means. Or somebody's preferred druthers on what they'd like to see, having nothing to do whatsoever with facts.
Exactly. And we have way too many opinions. We need to get to the nuts and bolts and get things done and stop allowing these opinion makers to sway everyone just based on nothing. Okay, how do they get a hold of you? How do they learn more about everything that you're doing? And I don't care who starts. You guys are both heroes in my mind. And, you know, the people need to be following you and learning what you're both teaching. So how can they get a hold of you or learn more about you or watch you? Do you have any talks coming up? Whoever wants to start.
I always offer your viewers an opportunity to write to me at my personal email at harleysch@gmail.com, and I'll send you the link to sign up for my blog page. I put out a weekly article. I'm now doing a daily 10 to 12 minute update that's available on YouTube at laroushepacvideos.com, or laroushepacvideos, I'm sorry. So people can find what I'm doing. They can go to laroushepac.com. But if you write to me, I appreciate that because I like to know what people are thinking. I'm engaging in an ongoing dialogue with as many people as possible. So harleysch@gmail.com is the best way to reach me.
Well, for me, I mean, you can always reach me through LaRouchePac. I mean, they would always relay things to me. Dennis Speed always does. I'm probably going to get a little more active on the web there, starting to do a little more in terms of saying what I have to say about these people, because I think it's needed anymore, you know, to have some other voice out there basically dealing with the lies you're being fed as you're being fed them. So that you know, you don't just go off and believe this crap that they're pushing at you. So I'm probably going to do that. I don't have a link yet, but I think you can, if you go to look at the movie A Good American, you know, you can see that. And then there's a link to agoodamerican.org, I believe it is. And you can get to me through that. Or you can Google my name or send me an email at williambinney0802@comcast.net. That's the way to reach me right now. Sooner or later, I'll get on the web and have more to say.
Excellent. And we need you to keep talking. We definitely need it because we need these voices out there of rational thought. And we are all going to disagree at some point, but you know, when you're actually doing like real meaningful things, I wouldn't mind disagreeing then, but we should all be in unison now because, oh my gosh, we need to fight this. And if people can't wake up and see that this is something we need to unify over, this is it. And so I thank you so much for coming to the show. You guys are just, you're American heroes, and thank you so much for everything you're doing and fighting and trying to keep this country healthy and alive.
Thank you, Sarah.
Thank you, Sarah, for what you do.
Yeah. Thank you.